folks who helped contribute material to the audio service in the way of bloopers and skits and information. I think it sounded pretty good, and I'd like to hear some of your comments on it. Well, let's get right over to the front page of DX News, the magazine of the National Radio Club, and fill you in on what's happening here. First of all, a little bit later on this side of the cassette, we're going to give you some information on the Alaska AFRN network, some frequencies and locations of stations. First, some station news from John Malicki. WIQT 1000 has moved to 820, and the station would like to know if you hear them, and if possible, to give them a comparison between when you heard them on their old frequency and how they sound right now. You can write to David Rockwell. He's the operations manager and program director of WIQT Radio, 106 John Street, Post Office Box 288, Horseheads, New York. That's spelled H-O-R-S-E-H-E-A-D-S, one word, and the zip code is 14845. Or you can call him at area code 607-739-3555. From a gentleman down in Florida, and per the Chamber of Commerce, WDLF and WYND in DeLand, Florida, went bankrupt and are now off the air at this particular time. And from Tony Clement, WMGJ went on the air on 9-11 of 85. They're on 1240 kilohertz, 1,000 watts, non-directional, 24 hours a day, and they have a black format with the Sheraton Broadcasting Network. Their slogan is Magic 1240. And if you hear them and would like to send a reception report to them, their address is 815 Tuscaloosa, that's T-U-S-C-A-L-O-O-S-A Avenue, Gadsden, G-A-D-S-D-E-N, Alabama, A-L. Zip code is 35901, and their telephone number, if you'd like to call them, is 546-4434. From Bob Benison, he says that the Pioneer KEA 433 AM car radio, which we mentioned in a previous DX Audio Service edition, is now available for only $159 per the spring catalog of Crutchfield. This radio in particular was listed out at about $399+. So if you'd like to get a hold of Crutchfield and get their free catalog, their telephone number is 800-336-5566. From Fred Osterman at Universal Shortwave Radio, if you want to get your name onto the system or have had some changes since last year, drop Fred a postcard with the information. The DXers directory will be out sometime in March or April, and updates are needed right now to bring the 1986 edition right up to date. The 1986 edition will sell for about $4.95 plus $1.05 for shipping. You can order yours from the Universal Shortwave Radio Shop at 1280 Ada, AIDA Drive in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. Zip code is 43068. Also, if you'd like to send a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Shortwave store, their address is N4561 Circle, C-I-R-C-L-E Drive in Cambridge, Wisconsin, 53523. They'll be sending out some information on some of their latest things that they have available, such as antennas and other shortwave and DXing pieces of equipment. That's the Shortwave store up in Cambridge, Wisconsin. Also, we'd like to remind you about the 1986 National Radio Club Convention. This year's convention will be held at the Ramada Inn, located in Newcastle, Delaware, at the intersections of Interstate 295 and Route 13 this Labor Day weekend. Now, they've been able to get some nice rates for those of you that set up their plans early and they want to share a room or something. You can get some darn good rates. For those of you that do it prior to August the 1st, rates will be $36 single, $42 double, $6 per extra with a 50% deposit. After April the 1st, reservations must be made directly with the Ramada with rates of $48 single, $54 double, and $6 per extra guaranteed with credit card. For an advanced reservation form information, please direct your inquiries to Dave Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, Post Office Box 11502, Wilmington, W-I-L-I-M-G-T-O-N, Delaware, and the zip code is 19850. And more information on this event will grace these pages of the DX News and the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service in a few more issues. And also be sure to include a mint 22-cent stamp to offset the costs of sending back this information to you. And, of course, we hope to see you in 1987 here in Lima for the 1987 National Radio Club Convention. From ANARC comes word that Bob Horvitz has been appointed as ANARC's Government Affairs Liaison. Also, ANARC is looking for some nominees in the area of Executive Secretary. If interested, contact Mike Nitter at headquarters back in Cambridge, Wisconsin. His telephone number, by the way, is area code 608-423-4159. And please, no collect calls. Or you can write to Mike at the National Radio Club, Post Office Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin, 53523-0024. By the way, that address we just gave for the National Radio Club is the same address that all renewals and subscriptions and sample copies and everything should go to when making any correspondence regarding your membership. Always be sure to send it to the Post Office Box 24 in Cambridge. And, of course, all personal letters and information that you want to send to the DX Audio Service can come right here to me. My address here is 706 McKenzie, M-A-C, capital K-E-N-Z-I-E, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Well, a couple letters here which we've received at headquarters are regarding the DX Audio Service. Sitting down and kind of compiling all the information, basically what we've got are some comments that people have made about the audio service where they think we can improve and things to cut out. First of all, we've had some suggestion as far as dropping all our logos, we call them, news logos, and going with straight text material. Of course, that is just one person who wrote in, so let's hear from the rest of you here in the audio service and find out what you would like to hear. Of course, majority rules, I guess, is the best way of putting it here. And we have a basic format which we follow that the National Radio Club has set up as far as what is supposed to be on the audio service. However, majority kind of rules as far as what kind of content is going to be on the service. We've also had a suggestion as far as lengthening the amount of AM switch material and the domestic DX digest material and dropping out some of the feature articles. We can do that. However, as I mentioned before, the problem with that is we're limited on a certain amount of time. So depending upon how long the AM switch runs and how long the domestic DX digest runs, it could almost eliminate all the travel logs and features and just about everything we include toward the latter part of each side. So let us know your feelings on that, whether or not you want us to lengthen out the AM switch column and the domestic DX digest column. The only other suggestion we had is to continue doing the audio service the way we've been doing it. So anyways, I guess those are our comments, letters from the listeners, etc. And be sure to write us and let us know how you feel. There's a lot of you that subscribe to the audio service, which, well, we've never heard from. So make your voice be known to us and let us know what you like and what you don't like and what material you would like to hear read here on the audio service. One suggestion which was brought up by a person who called me a couple of weeks ago was that we should mention some of the names of the new people which come aboard here on the audio service. And again, let's kind of put that to a vote and see what you think about that. Let us know what you feel about mentioning names of people who come aboard, or if need be, publishing on one of the editions in the future, maybe a roster of all the people who are on the DX audio service. So let us know your comments on that. Well, let's go right over to Jerry Starr with a look at the AM switch column. Here's Jerry.
Hi, everybody. This is Jerry Starr with AM switch on the DX audio service. Once again, taken from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News. We have three editions of the switch to get to today. The first is number 118, and it goes like this. Starting with call interchanges on 550, WEAM in Statesville, North Carolina. This station is WDRV. As a matter of fact, it never used the WEAM calls. Those were applied for about a year ago and then set aside. Of course, since then, the call WEAM has gone to Columbus, Georgia, where it is on 1580. On 790 WEAN, Providence, Rhode Island becomes WWAZ. 960 WBMC, McMinnville, Tennessee becomes WTRZ. On 1000 WIXI, Jupiter, Florida changes to WKSY. On 1030 WRMM is changing its call again in Sterling Heights, Michigan. Now they will be WFXZ. On 1110 KAKA in Dermont, Arkansas, decided they don't want to be Kaka anymore. They will be KXSA. On 1290 WEYE, Sanford, North Carolina, another occurrence where the call was applied for, then set aside and never used, they have remained WSBL. On 1390 KCEY, Turlock, California becomes KYES. 1400 KRCQ, Indio, California becomes KGOF. On 1430 WKSD, Panama City, Florida changes to WLTG. 1470 KBCM, Tremonton, Utah changes to KKVU. And finally on 1580 WBLO in Orangeburg, South Carolina changes to WPJK. A couple applications for new stations on 720 in Selma, California. That's a second application for that facility. Also a second application on 1050 for Wasco, California. A couple new stations have been granted on 1100 in Woodbine, Georgia with 10,000 watts D1. And on 1160 in Trumansburg, New York with 1,000 watts day, 500 watts night U4 antenna. Couple interesting applications on 1270 KIAM, Nenana, Alaska, is applying to move to 630 kilohertz. And on 1550 WRHC, Coral Gables, Florida, once again, reapplying to move to 1560. Highlights from some interesting grants in this edition include on 750 WRGE, Oliphant, Pennsylvania, has been receiving a grant to change from directional to non-directional and to lower their power to 400 watts. On 810 KTBI in Ephrata, Washington, raises their power to 41 kilowatts. On 930 WADU, a new station not yet on the air in Norco, Florida, has been granted a change in its powers. They will be 5,000 day, 750 nights U4. On 1160, my closest unheard station, WCCS in Homer City, Pennsylvania, gets a grant to raise their day power to 5,000 watts, so maybe there's hope that I will hear that station yet. On 1330, WSGG, Scottsboro, Alabama, goes full-time by adding 500 watts at night. Their antenna mode will be U2. Scanning down through this edition's otherness highlights, on 640 WOI, Ames, Iowa, that full-time is expected on by March the 15th, so by the time you hear that, that should be on full-time operation. 660 KTNN, Window Rock, Arizona. This new station is now on the air. 800 KLTT, Brighton, Colorado. This station is silent. On 870 WQRX, Valley Head, Alabama. New station is on the air. And KROL, Lachlan, Nevada. Target date is July 1986. On 910 WVVQ, Hesperia, California, target date for this station is late summer 1986. 950 KAHI, Auburn, California, their full-time CP is now on the air. And 1040 KRAD in Perry, Oklahoma, target date is, to quote the station, within the next 90 days. On 1100, an application for a new station in Milan, Georgia, that has been dismissed. One still remains, so there's a possibility there still may be a grant for one station in Milan, Georgia on 1100. On 1170, WWEE, new station in Collierville, Tennessee, is now on the air. On 1190, WKDJ, Hughesville, Pennsylvania, new station now on the air. And finally, in Erie, Pennsylvania, on 1330, WRIE, this station is off the air. Several years ago, some new owners acquired the station. Since then, they've been having financial difficulties, and a few weeks ago, the sheriff came and padlocked the door of the radio station's studios. So that station is off the air, and the rumor is that the station may very well be sold at sheriff's auction in a couple months. Now let's take a look at the goings-on in AM Switch number 119. Starting, as always, with call letters. On 580, new station in Tucson, Arizona will be KJMM. 760, new station in Brandon, Florida, WJCZ. 930, WJAX, Jacksonville, Florida becomes WRXJ. On 980, WKPJ, London, Kentucky, changes to WMAK. On 1030, new station in Pleasure Ridge Park, Kentucky, which is a suburb of Louisville, will be WONS. 1050 WIGL Augusta, Georgia changes to WFAM. On 1460, WQLS Painesville, Ohio changes to WBKC. 1470 WVTY Dunedin, Florida will be WLVU. On 1530 WCRJ Jacksonville, Florida changes to WJXW. 1560 WBKC Chardon, Ohio becomes WCDN. And on 1580 WJIK Camp Lejeune, North Carolina changes to WBQZ. One application for a new station on 720 in Atascadero, California, which competes with an existing application for that frequency in that town. And one new station has been granted. That is on 1150 in Canton, Mississippi, 500 watts D1. Taking a look at one interesting application from the applications from existing facilities on 1190 WAYD in Ozark, Alabama, would like to move up a notch to 1200 kilohertz with 10,000 watts daytime only. Several grants have been made to existing facilities, including a 930 KAGI in Grants Pass, Oregon. Night power to 1,500 watts. The antenna will change to U4. And on 1310 KIOT, Barstow, California, reduces their night power to 500 watts, makes changes in the antenna system. However, the antenna mode will remain U4. And a long otherness column in edition number 119. Some of the highlights include on 650 KBKK, North Las Vegas, Nevada. This construction permit has been around for several years, is no longer listed on the new database, so evidently that construction permit has been canceled by the FCC. On 660, an application for new station in Portland, Oregon, that has been dismissed. On 800 CKOK in Penticton, British Columbia, their move to 780 kHz is stalled for the foreseeable future due to financial considerations. On 820 WIQT, Horseheads, New York, they have moved here already. That was only granted a month or so ago. They have moved from 1,000 kHz to 820. They are temporarily, though, daytime only. On 840, kind of an interesting construction permit in North Las Vegas, Nevada, the FCC database shows a CP here for 50,000 day, 25,000 nights, U4. No call is listed, so evidently this is not a reassignment of the KBKK North Las Vegas on 650, which we mentioned a few minutes ago has disappeared from the database. According to the FCC, it was granted on the 17th of April in 1985, but it never appeared in any of the public notices. Every once in a while, the FCC will do this. This, by the way, is not to be confused with the 840 CP in Gardnerville, Nevada, which is also still current. Another one of those left-field surprises from the FCC that helps keep things interesting. So enter into your log a CP in North Las Vegas, Nevada for 50,000 day, 25,000 nights, U4. On 850, CKRD, Red Deer, Alberta, their move to 700 is scheduled for June of 86. On 1010, an application for a new station in Rancho Mirage, California. There were two applications. Both of those have been dismissed. On 1030, KGUS in Florence, Arizona. Previous report that this station was on the air appears to be in error. It's bad information from another club's bulletin. KGUS is not yet on the air. On 1030, an application for North Palm Springs, California. Application for new station has been dismissed. On 1030, KAHU in Hilo, Hawaii, their transmitter is under construction with an air date expected in late spring. On 1130, WHHQ in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, their full-time CP is now on the air. They are 24 hours. 1170, WMVI Mechanicsville, New York, their move to 1160 is expected by midsummer. On 1220, CKDA, Victoria, British Columbia, moved to 1200 kilohertz anticipated by this summer. On 1230, KJUK, Bethel, Alaska, this long-standing CP finally has been canceled by the FCC, so you can scratch that out of your logbook. On 1240, KBZB in Bisbee, Arizona, this long silent station was reported by several other DX bulletins as being back on the air with the call KESE. The truth is that the station is still silent and has been silent for several years now and has no immediate plans to reactivate the facility. We talked to some people in Bisbee and they give us this information. By the way, the FCC database still says the call is KBZB. On 1270, KWTR in Lakeport, California, their CP to move to 840 has been canceled. On 1310, WDLF, DeLand, Florida, the station is now silent. 1340, KSKI, Haley, Idaho, their move to 1330 has been put on the back burner due to financial considerations, so they are now going to remain on 1340 indefinitely. 1430, WBMK, Knoxville, Tennessee, station was silent. They are now back on the air with the identical black format they had before they went silent. And on 1520, KJIA, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, that station is silent. And finally, for this month's AM Switch, we move on to edition number 120, starting with call letters on 690 WAPE, Jacksonville, Florida, changes to WJAX. On 1050 KSPO Dishman, Washington, this station just a few weeks ago did a DX test for our club. Under those calls, they are now changing to KEYF. On 1170 WRTT, Vernon, Connecticut, new call will be WCTF. 1260 WKGA, Grafton, West Virginia, changes to WTBZ. 1400 KDTA, Delta, Colorado, becomes KPLG. On 1550, Country Cargo, KRGO, in West Valley City, Utah, will be KRPN. And on 1560, WQKZ in Bolivar, Tennessee, will be WBOL. By the way, a note on call letters. The situation in Jacksonville has become very confusing. A number of stations have been sold. Some have been swapped. Some people have bought AMs and sold the FMs to other people. All in all, there have been a lot of call letter changes. Not only new calls, but existing calls moving to different frequencies and from AM to FM and vice versa. To clear up whatever confusion may exist, here as of today, and this is the 19th of March, 1986, here are the calls in Jacksonville at the frequencies and stations in question. As of today, the call on 690 is WJAX, on 930 WRXJ, on 1220 WKTZ, on 1280 WXOZ, and on 1530 WJXW. Of course, following the history of the situation, that may change again, but as of today, that's what's going on with the calls in Jacksonville. One new station applied for in this edition on 880 in Wentzville, Mississippi. This is actually an application that was sent in before. It is being reapplied for with revised power levels. One new station has been granted. That's on 1010 in Thousand Palms, California, 5,000 day and night, U4. Couple interesting application highlights from existing facilities on 1010 WKQT in Garyville, Louisiana. Would like to change their city of license to La Place, Louisiana, and change their night power to 350 watts. On 1150 KQQQ in Pullman, Washington, would like to move to 650 kilohertz with 1,000-day, 500-night. 1520 WCSP, Crystal Springs, Mississippi, once again is applying to move to 590 kilohertz. They have applied several times before, and the FCC keeps kicking the application back. And finally, on 1530 KSMM in Shakopee, Minnesota, wants to raise their power to 8,600 watts. And highlights of grants on 1330 KLBS, Los Banos, California. They have been granted new power levels, 410 watts daytime, 500 watts nighttime, and they change their antenna mode to U2. We'll also relocate the transmitter as that station becomes full-time. And on 1510 WTRJ in Troy, Ohio, they will be moving to 1030 kilohertz, 2,500 watts non-directional daytime only. WTRJ is still a CP. They were granted on 1510 several years ago and almost immediately reapplied to move to 1030. At first, the FCC denied their move to 1030 and instead granted a new station in Union City, Indiana. This since has gone into hearing, and the hearing reversed the decision. So now, Troy, Ohio, will be moving to 1030, and the station granted in Union City, Indiana on 1030 now has been dismissed. Looking into the otherness column, starting with 1030, WBZB, Indian Head, Maryland. Latest announced target date is 420. They will be contemporary Christian format, that is suburban Washington, D.C. And on 1170, WCTF in Vernon, Connecticut, which was silent as WRTT, is expected back with their new call on the air shortly, also with a religious format. That about covers all the bases for this edition of AM Switch. I'm Jerry Starr for the DX Audio Services from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News. Once again, here's Fred.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Well, questions are being raised by the Country Roundup in Detroit. In an article in the Detroit Free Press, March the 8th, 1986, the sale of WCXI AM and FM earlier this week marked the last roundup for country music competition in the Detroit radio market, and it brought with it a slew of reaction from the interested parties. The WCXI AM staffers, for instance, expressed anger that their station had been sold to Los Angeles-based Shamrock Broadcasting, which also owns competing country station WWWFM 106.7 locally. There was a lot of resentment in the fact that they had to sell to WWWW, said one WCXI employee. It's like anybody but them. And when new WCXI-FM owner Charles Fritz, who also owns WXYT-AM 1270, the old WXYZ radio, announced that he intended to replace the country format with some type of adult contemporary easy listening mix, some staff members joked about installing a dentist chair in the studio. The consolidation of country music under one owner means that for the first time, country will be competing with the rest of the market instead of three other stations beating up each other, according to Martin Rapp, a promotions director at WCXI. WCXI-FM's future may be determined, but no one's sure what's in store for the AM station, short of being sure it will stay country with WWWW. Lots of theories are being presented, but as WWWW General Manager Phil Lampka said, it's a little too early to tell what will happen at this point. We haven't sat down and formulated any specific plans for it. Most of the questions center around the future of WCXI's AM staff. Once merged, profit motives indicate that the WCXI-WWWW operations won't be needed to double the size of the staff, promotion, and other support staff. There are also rumors that Shamrock may choose to simulcast the two stations, a move that would decrease talent costs because it wouldn't need a large air staff. And if that happens, the company may be forced to choose between or change the status of such high-profile and high-salary personalities as WCXI's Dino Day and WWWW's Chuck Santoni. "We haven't made any decisions on those areas yet," said Lampka. Any comments about the changes or no changes is premature at this point. Lampka said, however, that he expects the two stations to be able to hang on to the 6-7% share of the audience the three country stations tended to gather, though some observers say that part of the audience may be lassoed by other stations. "It's a little hard to say," Lampka explained. "We anticipate that the share might go down slightly, but it's something you can't really predict. We certainly don't plan on dropping very much. Both stations have established strong, loyal listenerships. We'll have to see what happens." That article from the Detroit News, March 8, 1986.
The FCC plans to release a report in early 1986 that would examine a wide range of approaches, including future rulemaking, to improve the overall state of AM radio. FCC Mass Media Bureau Chief James McKinney said that one of the first items to be addressed on the applications was the use of synchronous AM transmitters. The NAB and others who commented on the proposed rulemaking asked the FCC to instead devote a rulemaking proposal solely to synchronous transmitters instead of having the plan as part of dockets containing other issues. Several AM broadcasters have submitted formal complaints to the FCC regarding the higher levels of Cuban interference. The increasing interference seemed to start, broadcasters say, following the October 1985 inauguration of WAQI Miami, a 50,000-watt Spanish-language station operating on 710 kHz. Some of the other frequencies hampered by Cuba interference are 1160 and 1210 kHz. The FCC said that it plans to study the issue further. The U.S. State Department, however, said that no talks with Cuba are scheduled on this issue. For information on the Cuban interference problem, you can contact Louis Stevens at the FCC at area code 202-632-7792. Delays continue to be a factor in the signing of the final accord in the United States and Mexico Agreement on Daytime Broadcast Action. The final accord paves the way for daytime broadcasters on Mexican clear channel frequencies to add night operations. A preliminary U.S.-Mexican broadcast agreement was signed in August 1985, with plans for the final signing to be made in November 85. However, the earthquake in Mexico all but destroyed some of the buildings containing the Mexican Communications Department. Preliminary agreement also paves the way for Class 3 stations to extend their post-sunset operations past 6 p.m. local time. In a related story, daytimers operating on any of the seven Canadian clear channels received show cause orders from the FCC late last summer authorizing night operation. However, many stations said they received lower power levels than expected. The FCC is preparing for the April 1986 Regional Administrative Radio Conference, RARC, in Geneva, Switzerland, which will examine expanding the AM broadcast band to 1705 kHz in the Western Hemisphere. Most nations, including the United States, seem to favor relatively low-powered 5-kilowatt regional stations for the new band. the band should be open to broadcasters by 1990. The docket number for this action is GEN-84-467, and you may obtain more information from the FCC by calling Jonathan David at area code 202-7792. And finally, the FCC voted in late October of 1985 to delete its non-technical restrictions regarding AM applications, otherwise known as birth control rules. The NAB and the NRBA had agreed with the Commission proposal to repeal the so-called AM birth control measure, which places restrictions on the filling of certain AM applications. The rules excluded otherwise acceptable applications for new AM stations and major changes in existing AM stations unless those applications would bring service to an area where there was no service or where service could be bettered. You can contact Jonathan David at the FCC for further information. And reporting for the DX Audio Service, this is Phil Tallman.
There was another interesting article in the Detroit News written by Gary Graff on radio. It's called, Like It or Not, DJs Will Keep On Talking. The listeners don't like it. The disc jockeys know the listeners don't like it, but they continue to do it. And the programmers know the listeners don't like it, but they continue to have their disc jockeys do it. This ongoing radio vice is disc jockeys talking over the beginning and sometimes over the end of the records they play. For music fans, it's a frustrating indulgence on the part of the radio station, sometimes ruining the strongest part of the song. What good is Johnny B. Goode, after all, if some disc jockey talks over Chuck Berry's legendary guitar riffs? But it continues to be done, particularly with the resurgence of Top 40 radio popularity during the past 2 years. Those who do it, however, defend it as a means of generating excitement and making listening to the radio a different experience than listening to the song at home on a stereo. It's a reminder that, in the middle of all the music, there's a live person there entertaining you, explained Steve Weed, program director of WCZY. If people just wanted music, they'd listen to other forms of entertainment than us. We're offering more than a music service. There's companionship of the person who's on the air. Disc jockeys talking over songs is hardly a new phenomenon. Some historians have traced it all the way back to the late 1940s, crediting the late Bob Crane, the former star of TV's Hogan's Heroes, with starting it back when he was at KHJ in Los Angeles. It became a stylistic signature with the development and popularity of pop music during the late 50s and the early 60s. However, when legendary disc jockeys like Alan Freed and Wolfman Jack laid their raps over songs in order to keep the energy levels high, there you have it. In those days, what it gave you was the momentum, said CKLW AM operations manager Dave Schaefer, who programmed the station during its popular music heyday. You could put some excitement into the show, make the listener feel it's moving at a fast pace. The whole motivation was to create excitement, he added. You want to make them feel it's something you never want to leave for a moment. You just keep things moving, 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 never leave any dead air. After being a part of the AM radio's top 40 scene during and through the mid-60s, however, the technique died during the late 60s and early 70s when the rock and roll listenership moved to the FM band. There they were listening to heavier, more involved songs, and disc jockeys set the mood with mellow, resonant, between-song patter that never intruded on the songs themselves. By the early 80s, as a new teen market became excited about the new bands, the doors opened to high-energy Top 40 radio, and then made talking over music a viable technique again, to the point that adult contemporary, urban contemporary, and even some album rock stations began using it. Regardless of what listeners think, however, it's something that the stations will remain attached to, and at least until there's evidence they're losing listeners over it, the disc jockeys will keep talking over the music.
Records returns to the rock. John Records Landecker has spent much of the last 5 years trying to outgrow his image as a teeny bopper nighttime disc jockey. Recently, the 38-year-old personality returned to WLS in Chicago, where he developed his large teen following on the 7 to 11 p.m. air shift he occupied from 1972 to 1981. After leaving a highly successful 9 years at WLS, Landecker became a successful morning drive personality at Toronto's 50,000 watt CFTR. However, money and family were in Chicago, and in 1983, Landecker returned to try afternoon drive on a popular FM album rocker. He was not happy there, and after 9 months crossed the street to another FM station that had recently changed to a contemporary hit format. But CHR was not given time to work, and the station soon became Album Rock WCKG. After a year at WCKG, Landecker failed to attract an audience commensurate with his six-figure salary. Recent Arbitron figures credit Landecker with a meager 1.3% share of the mornings, compared with WCKG's overall 1.9%. Now that Landecker's back at WLS, will he resurrect the once popular boogie check? WLS operations manager John Guerin doubts it. "It's a different radio station now, and John is a different personality," stated Guerin. "We're not trying to recreate what was." So, once again, the man who claims Records is truly his middle name, once again, rules the nighttime airwaves at Mid-America's music station. This is Phil Wayne for the DX Audio Service.
Thank you very much, Phil. Now it's time to take a look at the domestic DX Digest column, and Bob Walker is going to be taking a few months off, so I'll be sitting in for the next couple of issues of the domestic DX Digest column East and the domestic DX Digest column West with a look at what's going on the DX charts. The East column is edited by Dave Schmidt of 42 Chelwine Road, Castle Hills, Newcastle, Delaware. Zip code is 19720, and Chelwine is spelled C-H-E-L-W-Y-N-N-E. The following is from issue number 21, volume 53, and it looks like it's the Steve Francis hour. Steve is from Alcoa, Tennessee, and DX is with a TRF. And he has five items to report under the special column. And first of all is on 1130 WHHQ in Hilton Head, South Carolina. He's now being heard here on the evenings. So the full-time CP is now on. Schedule is 24 hours per the SRDS. On 1160, WAMB in Donelson, Tennessee, has dropped their AM schedule. Sign off nightly at 0105 with Moonlight Serenade after the Mutual News. On 1250, WZOB in Fort Payne, Alabama, is now 5,000 watts per their sign-off. On 1390, in Fields Landing, California, KKDV is now on the air per the SRDS. And on 1430, WBMK in Knoxville, Tennessee, this station was formerly silent and it now has now returned to the air, still with a beautiful music format. Now let's take a look at DX tests, and all three of these DX tests we had reported on in past editions of the DX Audio Service. First of all, on 730 KURL in Billings, Montana, Rhea Ruda up in Massachusetts, Ashwood, Massachusetts to be exact, tried for it on the 210 schedule, but did not hear the station. Steve Francis down in Alcoa, Tennessee also tried for it, but he said that he had a huge auroral that night and couldn't even hear any of the Chicago stations, so conditions were quite bad for hearing Montana. And finally, also, John Malicki in Pennsylvania tried and noted the Cuban station there, the Mexican on 730, and also Trinidad, but did not hear KURL at all. On 1000 WIFX in Jenkins, Kentucky, well, it seemed that they had a fair signal from 220 until 239 and 247 till 305, despite the terrible conditions. Heard bluegrass music, test tone, and IDs. And this was reported by Kermit Gary out of Walnutport, Tennessee. And John Malicki tried for it and heard from 2 o'clock till 2:43, non-existent, fading in, then peaking good at about 3:25 with bluegrass, C&W music, many IDs, including transmitter location and height above sea level, and then it faded out by about 3:43 and then was completely gone. On 1310, WDCT in Fairfax, Virginia, on 210, according to Mr. Kermit Carey, it was good on both 5,000 watts directional antenna from 112 until 130, and from on the 1,000 non-directional from 130 until 2 o'clock with test tones, Christmas music, and many IDs. John Malicki also heard him from 1 o'clock to 1:30 fair with WJAS on 1320 Splash and an ID by a male and female announcer. He also heard the Christmas music in good and varied test tones. It was kind of weak from 1:30 until 2 o'clock with some test tones and brief pieces of music. Ray Arruda heard him from 108 until 158, tentative, he says, with varying tone in five-second lengths. He did hear little bits of music, and was mixing in with WORC and WICH at the same time. Steve Francis says it was weak with varying test tones, usually strong on the day rig, but the Aurora was raging that night, and he had an awful lot of problems in hearing northern stations. And finally, Dave Schmidt, or make that Jerry Starr, says that he heard bits of the DX test, noted the Christmas music. The male and female voices IDs were better than expected, even though there were conditions that were worse than were in the past. And Dave Schmidt kind of put down a note saying that you should have heard him back on 2-8. I guess the conditions were a lot better on 2-8 than they were on 2-10. Let's take a look at the Midnight Midday column. And starting on 790 in Wellsville, New York, WLSV was briefly heard with an ad at 0151. That's back on January the 21st. Olean mentioned, and then it faded. This was heard by John Malicki in Pennsylvania. In Charleston, South Carolina, WKCN on 910 on February the 9th at 206 plus was very good with an ID. TalkNet, and then it faded to CKLY. It was back at 3 o'clock with CBS News, an ad, and an ID, and a mention of 24 hours news talk, and dueled with DeRocher Terrace and Brentwood, also heard by John Malicki down in Pennsylvania. On 920... KYST in Texas City, Texas, was heard on 2-9 at 48 minutes past midnight until 1:36 in the morning. Very good at times with mentions of KYST Fan Club in English, phone number, then Spanish announcements. ID dueled with Houston, female announcer again, on 2-11 at 3 minutes past the hour, or make that 3 minutes past midnight. Strong after WMMN sign-off with English and Spanish mentions of a rock concert. An announcer talking in both English and Spanish. That was heard by John Malicki. On 950, KPRC in Houston, Texas, was heard on 2-9 at 29 minutes past midnight. Very strong with no WWJ, with local break requesting comments, TalkNet, jingle, and an ID on the hour. Again, heard by John Malicki. Here's kind of an unusual one. On 1000, WIQT in Horseheads, New York, was heard on 2-11 from 2 o'clock until 2:02 in the morning, was strong with a test tone and some MOR music and IDs. This heard by Kermit Gary in Pennsylvania. On 1090, WVCG in Coral Gables, Florida, was heard on 2:12 at 3 o'clock in the morning. Very strong with English IDs, and then into Spanish with male and female announcers and the Radio Familia ID, heard by John Malicki. On 1160, WFEN in Fenton, Michigan, was heard on 2-7, February the 7th, that is, from 1:04 until 2:10 in the morning, and it was under WJJD with MOR music, weather, ID, and news on the hour, heard by Kermit Gary. On 1250, WGHP in Farmville, North Carolina, this station on 2-8 from 6:20 until 6:30 was alone in the frequency with C&W music, weather, and ads, heard by Kermit Gary. The new station down south of me here, 1270 WUCO in Marysville, Ohio, which is a suburb of Columbus, was heard on February the 9th from 1:08 until 1:20 in the morning. No sign of WXYT in Detroit with CNN News, Sports, C&W Music, Ad, and Chatter by Announcement. Again, heard by Kermit Gary. On 1420, WOC in Davenport, Iowa was heard on 1:29 at 2:57 in the morning. Fair with IDs, ads, talk radio, NBC News. John Malicki notes that WHK was off but returned to the air at 3:12 in the morning. 1530 WDEY in Lapeer, Michigan, apparently is back on the air. This report by Kermit Gary, and Dave Starr kind of notes, Dave Schmidt notes that he thought the station was silent. Well, it was for a while, apparently due to a fire. This is the information that we got here at the DX Audio Service. The station was off the air for approximately 3 months and didn't notify the FCC that they were. But apparently due to a fire at their transmitter facility, which is located way out in the country and it is an unattended site, the station was off the air. They are noted back on the air on 2-6, February 6 at 5:54 in the morning until 6:35. They were strong in WCKY's Null with MOR music, ads, news on the half hour. And apparently they forgot to shut down the AM transmitter. Well, this is maybe true because they are a daytimer. Let's get back now to 1490. John Malicki heard a station which he does not know who it was. Maybe you might know by hearing the description. On February the 10th, he heard a station at about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was very good with the National Black Net Talk Show. No local break or ID. Heard Hilton Head in passing earlier. Likely could be WVBG, but if anyone has an idea, you might want to get in touch with John Malicki and let him know. Dave Schmidt would like to thank Bill A. for his early morning call. The morning of the 8th, about 5 o'clock, the band was completely gone over in Delaware. Sounded like day conditions with all the daytimers off. Never noted it that bad in the past. Well, how's the FC list coming? Well, John Malicki has offered to type it up. I've still got a lot of contacts to make, and I've gotten a few of the FM stuff set up. They call for dead air about 1 minute. So that's where we stand. Still have a number of contacts about after midnight stuff, though. And my first check with WDAS-FM, the announcer put me on the air asking me just what this consisted of. That's the third Monday morning of the month, which is 1:45 till 2 o'clock in the morning. Now let's take a look at the Domestic DX Digest Column West, which is edited by Nancy Hardy of 2301 Pacific Avenue in Aberdeen, Washington. Zip code is 98520. And Nancy reminds you that when you send in your reports, be sure to use Eastern Time if possible and one side of a sheet of paper, because she cuts all that into strips and then pastes it up so that everything is in order. And also be sure to put National Radio Club or NRC DX Audio Service on it so she knows where the report is coming from. Under the special category, KKOS in Vista, California, at 1,000 on the dial, is now the local station, according to Mr. Dan Sheedy of Escanitas, California. He says they're using the call sign of KKOS. That's the XKMLO. Under DX tests, on 7:30 KURL in Billings, Montana. This test was also heard by Dan on 210 with 1 kilohertz test tone and IDs at 205 and then also at 215, and that was under Mexico City's XEX. On the midnight midday column on 670 KPUA in Hilo, Hawaii. On 210 from 4:11 in the morning until 5 o'clock was good with automated oldies, jingle ID every 10 minutes, weather and legal ID at 4:29. No sign of KBOI. And this was heard by Keith Ferguson in Issaquah, Washington. By the way, he has a SX-62 receiver and long wire antenna, so apparently he can haul in those Hawaiian stations better than I can here in Lima, Ohio. On 870 KIEV in Glendale, California, was heard on 210 at 3:09 in the morning till 4 o'clock. Good, with Out of the Ordinary news program and a legal ID at 4 o'clock. This was also heard by Keith Ferguson. On 880 KRVN in Lexington, New Hampshire, was the dominant station at 3:06 in the morning on the 28th of January. No sign of KIXI with weather. Oh, yes, there is some still hope for 880, Keith wants to point out. On 1110, KFAB in Omaha, Nebraska, was also heard by Keith Ferguson on the 28th of January at 4 o'clock. They were clear. No sign of CHQT at all. They had a legal ID and went right into news. On 1210, KASY at Aberdeen, Washington, was heard by Don Kalaski of San Francisco, California. And he said he has a nice signal there on the 9th of February at 3:01 in the morning with no sign of KRSV's tone. Well, let's just hope that they fixed it, okay? 1260, a frequency in San Francisco, which used to yield KYA, now has KOIT. And that call sign then was the XKXLR. Well, they're back to the KOIT call sign again, and it was noted by Don Kasky. On the 7th of February at 1:21 in the morning, the new KOIT, the best listening for light rock, the announcement said, a switch from their former beautiful music type of music. Well, let's skip up now to issue 23 of volume 53 and go back to the Domestic DX Digest East column edited by Dave Schmidt. Under the special column on 730 WCXR in Alexandria, Virginia, was heard on the 26th of February from 1736 until 1750. It was good in WNAK's Null with Rock Oldies, Ads, Weather, and No Data Sign-Off with promo for 105.9 FM. Calls stand for Washington's Classic Rock. That's the XWPKX. Kermit Gary heard that one. And on 990, WMMA in Orlando, Florida, was heard on the 22nd of February from 1800 until 1815. Without WZZD, CBS News, and Golden Oldies music with female announcer, Lost at Power and Pattern Change. By the way, their slogan is Magic 99. That's the XWHOO, and also was heard by Kermit Gary. Under the DX Test column, on 1000 WIFX in Jenkins, Kentucky, was heard on the 11th of February, and our make that not heard on the 11th of February at 3:30 in the morning. Our editor notes that may have gotten a late start. They may have canceled due to the snowstorm in their area, but he said that there was no sign of WCFL, and this was sent in by Dave Haskell of Fortville, Indiana, who uses a super radio for DXing. On 1570 WVVW in St. Mary's, West Virginia, on the 17th of February from 1 o'clock till 1:32 was very strong without any XERF with perfect copy of Test Tone, male and female voice IDs, organ music, this heard by Kermit Gary. And John Malicki heard him on the 17th from 1 o'clock until 1:32, very good at times with extreme CHLO and XERF interference, also some CFOR at Aurelia. Varying test tone, some Christmas music, and IDs by a female announcer. Let's take a look at the Midnight Midday column. And under 540 WGTO in Cypress Springs, Florida, was heard on the 25th of February from 2:35 in the morning by Ed Mitkus up in North Carolina. He says this is very unusual for him to hear WGTO, and he heard CNW music and ID, and wanted to know whether or not they're on 5,000 watts or 1,000 watts night. Well, according to Dave Starr, he says they're just likely were just on their day pattern and didn't make the switch over. John Malicki would like to know who was on 570. He has an unID'd station on 570 at 2 o'clock in the morning on the 26th of February. He said it had a strong test tone in the WKBN null and no sign of the Cuban, but the station did not give any ID, so he has no idea who it is. If you know who might have been testing on the 26th of February at 2 in the morning on 570, you might want to let John or I know. WSUN in St. Petersburg, Florida, was heard on 620 kilohertz on the 25th of February from 2:20 in the morning until 2:30 in the morning. Very clear with CNW music, ads, and ID, and it was a real surprise for Ed Mitkus up in North Carolina. Something unusual on the 810 frequency, Schenectady, New York's WGY on the 24th of February at 1:12 in the morning was noted off the air. And that was by Jerry Starr in Ohio. On 1140 WRVA in Richmond, Virginia on 23rd of February at 1:33 was noted off with nothing but Spanish noted on the frequency. This is by Jerry Starr. And kind of a note put in by Dave Schmidt. He says, you better kiss them. I think that they're about one of the last 50,000 watters to have a silent period. And this is very, very true. Not too many of the 50,000-watt stations actually have a silent period in the morning. Finally, on 1210, WBYU in Baton Rouge, Alabama, was heard on the 22nd of February at 8:15 with lots of 60s and 70s rock music and a lot of IDs. This heard by Conrad Rocher down in Dickinson, in Texas. He uses an R2000 and 500 feet, I should say, of cyclone fence as a long wire. Not bad at all. Skipping on to an unusual section, pirate stations on 1619. An unID'd station was heard on the 22nd of February at 22:25 until 22:38 with a rebroadcast of WVOX-FM. It was suddenly off after ID in Saturday night Solid Gold program. Some time checks matched up. Can WVOX-FM be heard in New York City? This was heard, by the way, by Jerry Starr. And both Jerry and Dave Schmidt heard this one on 1630 RNCI. That's correct, not WNCI, but RNCI. On the 24th of February at 19 minutes past midnight until 48 minutes past midnight. It was a week with a program of odd music, some 30s stuff, un-ID'd rock music, and much beacon noise. Both, again, heard by Jerry Starr and Dave Schmidt, so you might want to check those frequencies out. Now set for the TV FC list here, very last leg of the FC business changeover. We have about 190-plus online now. Very slow week for once. But where's this DX season going, by the way? Let's go over to domestic DX Digest West before we wrap things up here. On 9:30, KRTH in Los Angeles, California, the XKHJ was heard on the 3rd of February at 3 o'clock. Fair with ID, Oldies Music, some KFRE 940 slop. AM 930 IDs heard later. Heard the call change on the 1st of February during a trip to Anaheim, and this was sent in by John Hilker of Carmel Valley, California. Let's get our states right. We're on the other side of the world here. Another interesting thing under Domestic DX Digest West was an emergency broadcast on 1260 KOIT in San Francisco, California. Was noted off and on all day and night on the 16th and 17th of February because of storm-related problems. And it seems that their transmitter tower apparently went down in a storm. By the way, the Domestic DX Digest column West is edited by Nancy Hardy. Let's get those credits in. And finally, the DX test on the west side, KURL 730 in Billings, Montana, was heard on the 10th of February from 2:10 until 2:30 in the morning. I was heard with some test tones, some IDs, frequency and power given every couple of minutes or so. It was poor at times due to KCBS 740 slop. It's a new station here, but it was heard in Southern California by Jim Hilker out of Carmel Valley, California. Let's get that one right, okay? And just under the wire special. Let's get one more in here before we wrap things up. On 660 KTNN in Window Rock, Arizona, was heard on the 1st of March at 21:50 until 22:25 with adult contemporary hit rock music. NBC News at 2200. It was extremely strong with no sign of CFFR at all. Many 66 AM KTNN Window Rock and Jingle 660 Window Rock KTTN. KTNN apparently stands for the Navajo Nation. Came on the air previous morning of 2:28. And this is according to Nancy Hardy, who lives up in Aberdeen, Washington. She DXs with a FRG7 and has a Radio West loop antenna. The Alaskan Forces Radio Network serves the top cover of America. The Air Force Arctic Broadcast Squadron, the AFABS, headquartered at Elmendorf Air Force Base near Anchorage, Alaska, conducts the portions of broadcasts for the Department of Defense, the Internal Information Program in Alaska, parts of Canada and Greenland. The AFABS carries out the DOD policy, which mandates that U.S. military personnel and their families are entitled to and should be availed the same type of radio and television service as their fellow citizens back in the continental USA. And that gives us some chances for DXing some very unusual stations. However, let me point out that a lot of these powers are very low, so it has to be a real good night for you to hear them, and hopefully the frequency will be clear and the conditions will be just ripe enough for you to hear some of them elusive Alaskan stations. Let me go down the list here and let you know about a few of these stations. First, in Black Rapids, there's a station on 1550, which operates with 50 watts of power. In Cape Lisburn, there's a 50-watt station on 1400. Also, in Cape Newham, there's a station on 1450 with 50 watts. This is the Air Force station. At Cape Romanoff, the Air Force station has 50 watts of power on 1240. The Air Force Station at Clear has a 100-watt transmitter on 1490. Cold Bay has a transmitter with 50 watts on 1490. Fort Yukon Air Force Station has a 50-watt station on 1340. And a frequency change here in Galena. The station there that used to be on 570 moved to 1400 with 50 watts. In Indian Mountain, the Indian Mountain Air Force Station has a 10-watt transmitter on 1240, and this is the top control site, by the way. And at Indian Mountain, the other station is on 1490 with 50 watts, and this is the bottom control station. And that wraps it up for this edition of the DX Audio Service. We appreciate your cards and letters letting us know what you thought about the April Fool's edition, and of course any comments or suggestions about the programs. The DX Audio Service may not be copied in whole or part without the express written permission from the National Radio Club or the DX Audio Service. See you next month. I'm Fred Vobey speaking.